Today, the 6th of June, marks the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings, centering on the invasion of Normandy, which happened today in 1944. With us on the line now is Simon Forty, who's authored more than 20 military history books and has worked in publishing for over four decades, specialising in military history. His interest in both publishing and military subjects was fostered by his late father, George Forty, a soldier and latterly curator of the RAC Tank Museum in Bovington. His latest book, D-Day UK, is the lesser-known history of the D-Day preparations in Britain. Welcome to the show, Simon.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks very much for joining us today particularly. I'm guessing it's a busy day for you.
Yes, it is. I've got to go down to Plymouth for a couple more interviews later on.
Oh, fantastic. So was it an interesting process putting this book together? Because you were trying to find out lots of bits that weren't necessarily kind of common knowledge to people.
Yes, it was really interesting. And it started a couple of years ago when I was doing some research in the American archives in Washington and discovered a huge cache of photographs of American troops in the UK. And following up on those and looking at local places, I live in Tynmouth in Devon, and looking around Devon and Cornwall, one realised just how much was still visible. And that sort of fostered my interest. And then going over to Normandy and seeing how well they signpost and show off their sites, which are much more obvious, obviously, because there are pillboxes and tanks all over the place, I thought that maybe in the UK we should be a little bit more obvious about our sites.
Yeah, definitely.
And started cataloguing them. And of course, you can now see there's an excellent website. The D-Day Museum in Portsmouth has an excellent website that does the same thing.
Okay.
And you can see all these locations that are not quite as well known, such as the place that Mulberry Harbour was built and launched in Hampshire at Leap. There are still wonderful remains to go and visit, and they aren't looked at too often.
Mm. Can you give us some more examples of places, significant places you'd come across?
Well, there are a whole load down in Devon and Cornwall where the hards were built for the task force to leave for Normandy. There are bits of Mulberry Harbour still off Portland. There's one in the water near Hayling Island, and there are still a number of places that you can go to and see where the troops actually boarded the ships in order to go to Normandy. And there are obviously large numbers of museums that link into this as well, and most of the airfields that saw people, the paratroops leaving in the early hours of the 6th. A lot of those still have obvious signs of occupation. Not all of them are airfields anymore, but you can certainly from the air you can see that they were. And one of the lucky things, I've got a friend who has a private pilot's license, and we were able to fly over the south coast of England looking at the sites today.
Wow.
And certainly that gives a different perspective on them as well. And some of his photographs, Leo Marriott's aerial photographs, are in the book.
Oh, fantastic. And a few of the places you've mentioned have been down the sort of southern end of England, but one of the places featured in the book is somewhere in the Scottish Highlands.
Scotland was hugely important, as was almost everywhere in Britain. Britain's too small an island for that many troops to coexist with everything else, all the stores and everything like that. So the whole of the country had to be used. And Scotland in particular was where where a lot of the training took place. First of all, there was the commando training centre at Achnacarry. And then all the people who would have been in charge of landing craft or used landing craft for amphibious landings were trained up on the locks in Scotland. There's an extremely good website called combinedops.com that covers a lot of this. And it's surprising. Pretty much everybody who went ashore in Normandy would have gone up to Scotland and trained up there.
Mm, fascinating. fascinating. So do you think that there's a lot of information out there then that people really don't know and aren't aware of that happened in...
I don't think it's as much they don't know. I mean, this material is available and can be... is touched on most in most books that, that deal with D-Day. But it's not particularly well coordinated. And it seems to me that we should there should be some system, and perhaps the website at the D-Day Museum in Portsmouth is a good starting point, that that perhaps identifies these locations in a slightly more coordinated way.
And a lot of people will have probably seen the Spielberg film Saving Private Ryan, which really, although I personally think it's a film very well done, but it really does kind of glorify the US's contributions to the D-Day landings, doesn't it?
Yes, the US, partly through Hollywood, but obviously for other reasons, tends to come out, if you put D-Day into Google, you almost always get American stuff. One of the reasons for that is all their photographs through their archives are free for use because they were taken by military personnel, whereas an awful lot of ours you have to pay huge amounts of money to various museums in the UK. So publishers tend to use American material for understandable reasons. Also, I mean, as the Americans have become the dominant power in the world, they tend to be able to push their side of things rather stronger than perhaps we do.
Yes.
And for example, Spielberg famously said, "Well, there's no British involvement in my film because weren't any Britons at Omaha Beach," in spite of the fact that landing craft and things like that were manned by the Royal Navy.
Gosh, that's terrible. Do you think he really thought that?
He probably did, yes. I mean, and you know, there are good examples of you know, historical inaccuracies in all military films. However, I think it must be said that Saving Private Ryan, from what one can make out, that those initial sequences were pretty realistic.
Yes.
It just shows how awful and horrible the whole thing was.
Yeah, they were incredible. I can't remember how long that opening sequence was, but it was something like 8 minutes of just really shocking images. And
it
seemed
to go on forever, didn't
it?
Yeah,
absolutely. One of the other things, David Cameron made a bit of a gaffe, didn't he, that Britain was a junior partner to America during World War II.
Yes, and it certainly in terms of D-Day, the operation was, there was probably more British and Canadian troops landed than there were Americans. Most of the ships were British, etc., etc. But on the other hand, one doesn't want to overplay that. I mean, it was a combined operation. It was both American, British, and also very heavy involvement by the Canadians, who were sometimes forgotten. The overall command was by Eisenhower, who may not have been a great general, but he was a great politician, and no surprise he went on to become President of the United States for as long as he was, because he was able to hold the rather unruly elements of British and American generals and prima donnas together, and obviously the Normandy battles ended up with complete victory.
And I'm interested to ask you, I mentioned in the introduction you've done over 20 military history books. When putting together these history books, has the way that you do your research changed over the years, obviously with
yes,
internet instead
much
of libraries?
Today. Because, I mean, the internet is such a wonderful tool. And my dad, who wrote a lot of military books before I started, he used to have to go to visit libraries all over the UK and in America to find material. A lot of that material is online now. So I realized the other day that I was looking at a document from which he had got the material to use in one of the maps in one of his books, because I recognized the the outlines of what he was showing.
Yeah, for that reason
I saw it online, and he had to go to America to find it.
Do you think that libraries particularly, that are not museums, because that's a different thing, but with libraries that are just books, do you think they could be phased out in replacement of the internet?
No, I've got a house full of books. I would never want to see those phased out. And I think that also, I mean, one of the problems with the internet is that, as we all know, is sometimes the signal isn't very good, or sometimes you can't find what you're looking for. And it's a lot easier to put 5 postcards in a book and be able to turn from page to page sometimes than it is scrolling up and down in the on screen.
Yeah,
I think the two things go together. What I think the internet is brilliant at is showing things like photographs. You can skim through a whole range of pictures on screen and see the ones that you're interested in. And that's that's a much quicker and easier operation than sometimes visiting libraries.
I'd
hate to think that the internet killed off the library. I mean,
yeah, that would be awful, wouldn't it? Every time I read a story about it with libraries closing, I think, oh no, please no.
I mean, I just remember as a child going into libraries and discovering things. When you can look around and skim and check things out, you get a much bigger impression of what's there and available. Whereas on the internet, you do tend to be having to look for something reasonably specific.
I just wonder, realistically, how many people on average under the age of, I don't know, 20, 25, have ever been to a library?
That's a really good point. I mean, my children, certainly, who are now late 20s, do most of their reading online.
Exactly. Interesting.
And I don't think they're interested in newspapers or anything like that.
No, it's a shame. Times they are a-changing, as they say.
Well, certainly for me. I'm an old lag, so.
Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's a fantastic book with amazing photography and things throughout as well. It's called D-Day UK, 100 Key Locations, and it's by Simon Forty, who we've been chatting to today. Simon, thank you very much for joining us, and I hope today goes well for you.
Thanks very much, and the same to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.